You are listening to the Myth TV Cast. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Myth TV Cast. My name's Pat DeVillo. With me is my co-host, Dan Fry.
How's it going, Pat?
I'm good, man. How's everything?
It's been a while. It's been a while here.
It's been too long, actually.
Yeah. I'm surprised that people aren't bitching.
Nobody's listening. Nobody cares.
Yeah. We got quite a few people.
We got enough.
Yeah.
So what's been going on since we talked last? I think the last episode released was back in end of April. It's been a while.
Something like that. Was it end of April? Or was it before that?
I was end of April, so.
Oh, okay. Well, we had a lot of good feedback on that last episode, by the way, with the William Talkington talking about implementing Myth TV across the campus. He actually came on the tech show then a few weeks later and kind of continued that chat. So if you want to hear what else he had to say, go take a look at, what was it, like 454 or something like that, of the Linux Link Tech Show?
Yeah, it was a couple episodes back.
Yeah, and, but it was a great, it was a really good conversation, you know, with him about that.
Yeah, it's
but
really,
the last...
sounds like a real interesting project he's working on.
Oh, yeah.
But the last thing that happened when we heard last was you were having massive hardware issues. You had a couple systems die on
you,
right?
All of them died on me. All in the same night. So something electrical happened here in the house, and I don't know what it is. I really was thinking that something would have happened to the backups units that are attached to all these things, but nothing. None of those died. You know, you walked around the house. There wasn't like an alarm clock that wasn't blinking. There wasn't the clocks on your stove or your microwave or the coffee maker. You know, none of that stuff was blinking. So it was really bizarre that it seemed to go just against the SSD drives that I had inside the master backend and the one front end that I have. So I ended up rebuilding that. Well, I got a new hard drive for the front end, the one front end. I rebuilt the whole back end completely. So what I have listed in the store out there on the mythtvcast.com/store, I built that box, and it's been running great since then. So the processor is really fast. It's got, you know, it's virtualized. It's got, you know, four. It's a quad core. So it's got 8 gigs of RAM. I had one slight issue, actually two slight hardware issues when I was putting this thing together, and I think I'm okay. I don't think I have to worry about any of this stuff. But I put a Zalman heatsink on top of the processor, and it has a heat pipe coming out of it. Well, that heat pipe is laying up right against one of the RAM sticks inside of there. I think it's okay because it's not actually touching the RAM itself. The RAM has a heat spreader on it itself. So it's the only thing really it's doing is it's putting some undue force against that stick when it's actually in the socket. But I haven't noticed any issues with it. My machine has not gone down one time for any reason whatsoever that would indicate that there was some type of like a power thing going on or anything like that. So it's been running rock solid since then. I'm real happy with all the components that I put together for that, you know, in the store there, and I'm glad it's something that I can kind of promote out to people if they want to get started with it. Because I periodically get hit up on, different things like, you know, Google Plus and Twitter and whatnot about what type of hardware to use. So I'm glad that something like this is going to work out for people, and I would definitely recommend if anybody's looking to build a new machine to start there at least, just to get an idea as to the type of hardware that we're running, and we know that it's working, you know, very really well. I'm pretty sure you're using the same motherboard too, aren't you, Pat?
I am. I had hardware issues where I had an Asus motherboard in the previous build, and it was working fine for a few months, and then it was January. I started getting really screwed up hardware issues. I was getting lockups and freezes and all sorts of weird things.
Right.
And I my guess it was the disk bus, the bus for the communication between the disk and the system. And because that's where it was, it was just weird. It wasn't the hard drive. I swapped out hard drives. You know, I tried many different things, and I tried the RAM, and I'm pretty positive that it was, you know, the connections through the motherboard. It was the motherboard that was the actual problem. Yeah, so I bought that same exact motherboard, and it's been rock solid. You know, I have zero complaints about it. My system runs pretty much 24/7, and
mine too.
It's been great. I haven't had any problems with it whatsoever.
I did have one issue when I originally put the specs together for that. The case that I purchased is a different form factor case to fit. You know, it fits smaller, smaller motherboards. You know, specifically for things like this, like you want to put together like a media center type of a PC, right? Well, it turns out there's a new form factor on power supplies. And so I've updated the list out there that has the appropriate power supply. This, it has a shorter power supply in it so that you can actually fit a full, you know, like DVD or Blu-ray drive. Otherwise, you couldn't fit it. They would just butt right up against one another. And depending upon the placement of the gang cable coming out of that thing, you would never be able to hook them up together. So the new form factor, I believe. Wait, let me get out there to the website. I believe it's an SXF form factor for power supplies.
Right.
It's the one that I have listed out there. So if you're interested, take a look at it. And let's see here. This is SFX form factor, which is just a smaller form factor. This is a 450-watt power supply, which is plenty for. There's a single terabyte drive in it. There's, you know, the graphics card, which is an Asus GT or GeForce GT 520. You know, the processor and memory and whatnot. The case is really small compared to my last one. It is really small inside of there, and it fits real nice in the entertainment center.
That's cool. So you did a fresh, clean install of what, Linux or Mythbuntu?
I did Mythbuntu, and it was 10.10, and I recently did the upgrade to 11.04.
You mean 12.04?
I'm sorry, 12.04. Yeah, 12. Wait a minute. What did I say? No, what I installed on there was 11.10.
11.10.
I'm getting my years mixed up here.
Yeah, it's 2012.
And I upgraded then just to 11.04. Yeah.
12.04.
Yeah. I only had a minor issue with the upgrade, and that was that. Now, I should have mentioned too, this was 11.10 running Mythbuntu 25, which was just released back in April. Okay, I'm really loving MythTV 0.25, by the way, and we'll talk about that here in a minute. But I did the upgrade. The only minor thing that I had happen was, for some reason, it lost the audio settings, the sound card settings, which really is just running it straight over HDMI. There isn't even another sound card in the device. So I don't know why it seemed to have an issue. It seems to be better support for the audio devices over HDMI when you're running like the embedded, you know, NVIDIA chipset, which is what my front end is running, which is just an old Atom board now.
Right.
Actually, it's a few years old now. So I see better support with selecting the HDMI audio by default in that type of a scenario than with an external card for some reason. So I don't know if that's just me or if it's something that you would kind of see kind of across the board or whatnot. But other than that, the upgrade went fine, no issues whatsoever with any recordings or anything like that are taking place. So I'm real happy with it. But I think we should talk about MythTV 0.25 because it was a.
My upgrade was pretty flawless. I had zero issues whatsoever. So.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
great.
So I updated my two machines, and I had zero problems with it.
Well, that's great. I'm really liking this release a whole lot. And I want to tell anybody who is new to MythTV that now is, I think, the time where you want to grab either like a Mythbuntu or a Linhess, throw it in a machine, and try it out. Because one... both Mythbuntu and Linhess will kind of walk you through a lot of the preliminary setup that you need to do. But then once you bring up MythTV the first time, there is now a setup wizard that you can run right from the setup menu Now, you probably haven't seen this yet, Pat, since you just did a regular upgrade progression, right? But if you install it brand new, if you look on the setup menu, I believe it's on the last item in the setup menu, there is now a setup wizard that walks you through scanning for your audio devices, selecting which ones they are, and initiating a speaker test so you can just send tones to the different channels just to make sure that they're working correctly.
That's pretty cool.
Now, if it's just over HDMI, you're just going to get the two tones, you know, because the speaker test utility, I do not believe does the multi-channel stuff for over HDMI, since it's just the PCM going out of that anyway, I believe. But it lets you test that your speakers are working and configured the way you want them to be. The next step lets you configure your video playback profile, which would, you know, if you're running an NVIDIA chipset, you would want to select one of the VDPAU profiles. You can test that out as well. The Blender Foundation, they did Big Buck Bunny, and which wasn't a they let you download a standard definition of the first 10 seconds of it just to verify
see it,
the
yeah.
standard definition.
I saw that.
And then there's another one that they released that's all high definition, just so you can verify that your machine is going to run appropriately with a standard definition and a high definition, you know, source coming out of it. And it's like just those two pages, boom, it's done. Your whole thing is set up. There's a screen size wizard as well that you can go in and just move your cursor with the keyboard, you know, right and left, and then hit enter, and then hit up and down, and hit enter, and it lets you square up your screen to remove any overscan, which tends to be a problem with some of the menuing. Not necessarily the video playback, but your menus may kind of go off of the screen because of overscan being turned on, and the video cards don't know how to handle overscan appropriately, or I don't know if there's a way in like the NVIDIA settings or the Catalyst settings to go in and disable overscan. But it's really a setting on the TV that you need to disable, if you can, if your TV supports it. If not, this lets you correct it for, you know, on the fly like that. And then once you set these things the first time, you never really have to go in and set them again unless you switch it to another TV. But it's a nice quick way to be able to go in and say, oh, here's my borders, you know, here's my audio profile, here's my video playback profile, boom, you're done. That I think is a big help for people, you know, new getting into Myth TV, to be able to go in. I think most of these things you can do just the remote control. You don't even need a keyboard hooked up at all. Go in, set these things up, and your playback is set to go. Then you don't have anything else to do, other than, you know, your tuners and all that kind of stuff.
On a side discussion, what do you think about the new audio player? They rewrote it completely. It's not all that much different from the old one as far as the function of it. It's somewhat different.
Uh-huh.
It's definitely improved, but honestly, I think it's a little disappointing. I think a lot of people were expecting a little more as far as a rewrite.
Right. I honestly don't use it anymore. I've been moving all of my music into Google Play, honestly, the Play Music app. And I have a couple, you know, Google TVs, and I have my phone, and I can play it from my laptop, the same source everywhere. So I've really been using that for music lately. I do have it set up so that, like, I can make, like, a quick playlist up for my kids if they want to listen to some of their music or something like that. But I don't know. I didn't play with it enough, and I thought some of the things weren't quite as intuitive as they maybe used to be. And maybe that's just me being familiar with the old way of doing it. But I had some issues with getting in and selecting the kind of music that I wanted to. So I don't know. I'll have to play with it a little more.
It was definitely different. The interface, the way it's laid out, is definitely different than what it used to be.
Yeah.
And it's
right.
So, you know, you gotta look at the online documentation. That definitely helps. You know, but. Yeah, it works, you know, but like I said, I think a lot of people are expecting something a little more radical and different.
Yeah, yeah. Something like the XBMC player. Or
that would have been phenomenal if there was something anything like the XBMC player.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful audio player. I guess the next project to work on is to get maybe a Google Music plugin into Myth. That would be a nice thing to do.
I don't see why. I mean, on at least in Ubuntu, somebody created a... What do they call it? The music, the Google Music frame, I think it was, or something like that. And it all it really does is it's a Python, you know, WebKit, you know, wrapper around launching play dot, you know, or was it music.google.com or whatever the URL is for it. And it, since it's all HTML5 based anyway, it just plays in the browser, no problem. So I imagine at some point somebody will create some type of like a streamer that can connect to that. If they release an API, I don't know if they've ever released an API for it.
Yeah, they used to have.
But that would be nice.
I remember years, not that long ago, so many years ago, they had plugins for like some of the online streaming music sites. They've seemed to deprecate it, you know, that it's not in there anymore.
Yeah, well, I remember I wrote that one that connected to, like, Sirius, right? I remember Sirius and
right,
XM.
Right, right, but you had to have
it. All it really did, yeah, there was a little binary that you could install that lets you stream it, right? But all I did was write a little menu that just went out, queried your account, or queried the channels, and gave you a menu that you could go through and broke it down by, like, their categories and stuff like that. But I don't even know what the heck happened with that thing, so it's probably out there still on the wiki somewhere.
Are you still subscribed to Sirius, or you don't use that anymore?
Well, I when I bought the car, I just bought the lifetime subscription for it because, you know, I was planning to keep the car, and I still have the car, you know, what, 6 years later now, 7 years later, and you know, I haven't had any issue with it. I don't listen to it all that much because I either use Pandora or, you know, Google Music, you know, in the car as well, so... but I still turn it on every now and then, and you know, it'll be for the life of the car, I guess.
I don't know. I just don't see the point of spending more money on another subscription. I'm already
spending
on a cable bill, you know.
I'm right there with you.
Another freaking bill, you know.
Yep.
You got your Netflix, you know, it adds up. You
yep.
know?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
But back to MythTV 025. It's nice. I really like what they've done with the theme, some of the new theming stuff. That's pretty nice.
Yeah, the step theme is really, really nice. That's what I've been running lately. I think it was just upgraded to version 1.6. The theme manager now is great. It doesn't MythTV, at least the distros don't ship anymore with the themes installed because it has a theme manager built right into the interface, so you can go into the setup menu, select your theme chooser, and look at all the different ones that are out there, and just right from there, hit download, and it'll download it, install it, and once it redraws everything, you'll have the new interface. So it works really, really nice.
Yeah, that's real.
That I think's been around for a release or so, right? That's not new to Myth 25.
The theme manager?
Yeah.
Yeah, they've had the theme manager, but they changed it up a little bit. It's definitely a little different from the last release.
Right.
What I noticed too is the metadata about the TV programs. They've changed that whole setup.
Yes, it's now job based, so you can kick it off of any recording or any movie or anything like that you have in your library, and you can actually say there's in one of the setup menus it says do you want to run, you know, jobs or not, and it'll allow you to say, you know, as say like a season progresses, you're watching this season, you know, season one of this season, and then next season they put out new artwork, it'll go download the artwork that's respective to that season, which is kind of nice. So if say you're watching something, it's in like its sixth season, but you want to go back and start recording something, or you've gone out and bought the DVDs for, you know, for an earlier season, it'll download the appropriate artwork for that season for you as well.
Yeah, it's really nice. And I think they changed the source of it too. Aren't they using I forget the name of it, but it's like an open source kind of a deal.
Yeah, I believe so. If
they were using, I think, IMDb information. Mm-hmm. I think they've moved to a different setup. I should have written it down. I completely forgot to.
They use the TVDB now for a lot of that stuff, which you can go out and if you scan something in, and you can go out and update it yourself. Like
yeah.
my wife had some cooking DVDs that didn't have information. I went out and updated some of the information on the episodes so that it would download appropriately. So
well, that's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but here are the key features that they mention here. I'm looking at the MythTV 0.25 release notes. And what they've done is they've broken it out between key features, major changes, there's some prerequisite changes, and stuff like that. But I want to hit on some of the key features here. The first thing right at the very top is the new MythTV Services API, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that more towards the end of this show. But that is a huge thing. I think I eventually see all of the front ends being rewritten, you know, to use all Myth Services API versus the old Myth protocol that's in there. That's, I guess, somewhat, you know, aging and dated now. This is, I think, you know, it's really a big thing to be able to access all the data on the Myth TV master backend through this mechanism. The next item is that the cable card devices like the HD Home Run Prime and the Seton Infinity V4 are now supported without any workarounds to get them up and running. And I can attest to this right now. I had to go back and, you know, since I rebuilt the whole machine and I did it with Myth 25, I laid down a base install of Mythbuntu, you know, 11.10, which would have been Myth 24 at that time, did the upgrade through the Mythbuntu Control Center repositories update, and then I went and set up all the tuners and all that stuff. The cable card stuff recognized immediately. It took all of, you know, 2-3 minutes just to get all the three different tuners all set up inside of there. You don't have to build a dummy recorder now and then delete the dummy recorder and download all the channel data beforehand like you used to, which is really, really nice. Let's see, the MythNet Vision sources, you can now, you know, update these things much more easily. Either, you know, I don't even think you need to have a keyboard. You can do everything just by your regular remote control. I don't know if it's still if it ties this into like your watch recording list yet or not. I haven't tried it out, which I'm hoping that at some point it does, kind of like how the Miro bridge works, where
right,
it runs Miro in the background, and then it's just I think it's a Python script that updates the recording database and stuff like that. It would be really nice because there's a lot of video, you know, shows that I do download regularly and through the Miro bridge still, and I would love to be able to do that same thing, you know, right inside of Myth TV native. Let's see. So HTTP live streaming. This is another big thing.
Big thing.
This is going to tie back in with the Myth TV services API and the HTTP live streaming. I believe this was originally an Apple, you know, API that they put out.
Yeah, it's their own protocol that they developed.
Yeah, and it allows you to stream right over HTTP, which is really nice. It seems to be pretty lightweight, and I'm really digging it. You can go and test this out, okay? If you go to your IP address for your Myth TV master backend and go to port 6544, which is the standard port that the Myth TV protocols run on. Same thing for the Myth TV services API runs on. Unless you've changed that default port, which I don't know why, you know, you really need to or anything like that. But if you go type that into your browser, then you can look at the Myth TV Services API. They have an example of the HTTP live streaming there. From there, you can kick off a recording job. I'm sorry, a transcoding job, and give it a minute or two, and then you'll be able to play it right in the browser there, which is really nice.
Oh, look
okay.
at that. That's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, you know, and it's from there, then you'll be able to monitor that, and I'll talk about that in a little bit then, too. Let's see, the next item on the list is VAPI support. I'm not sure what VAPI is, but...
I believe VAPI is kind of like VDPAU, but for Intel.
Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Successor to XVMC.
Yeah. It's a different... hardware
for Intel.
Decoding for Intel chipsets.
Yeah.
So hey, that sounds good, man. So you might be able to do
that's great. Yeah.
Playback
yeah.
stuff.
Right. That'll be really nice for anybody using Intel graphics cards. Let's see. They have DirectX Video Acceleration 2. Oh, so it's DXVA 2. I guess this is just on Windows and it's only alpha supported right now. This next one I'm really interested in is CEC capabilities. If you don't know what CEC capabilities are, it's the ability to send command controls over HDMI without the need to have like an extra like blaster or anything like that. So, for instance, you have your Myth TV hooked up to a TV over HDMI. You should theoretically be able to take your TV remote control, and it will send your up, down, left, right, okay, enter, okay/enter type things back, all straight pass through into Myth TV. Now, to do this in MCTV, the video cards do not support this, so you have to get yourself a little breakout box, you know. And I bought one of these, so I'm still playing with it, and I hope to have a better idea as to what's going on with this in a few weeks after Self and all that kind of stuff. But I've been talking with some of the developers, and they would be interested in coming on to talk about CEC, specifically how they're doing it, because they support XBMC, and now that MythTV is supporting the libcec library, you know, they would be interested in coming on to talk about it. So I'm hoping to get those guys lined up in a month or so after I've had a chance to play with it. But the nice thing about it is too is you can then script your LIRC. You can build your own scripts to say send you know volume up commands through HDMI, say, to my receiver. Or, you know, if you want to do that to your TV, it'll do it to your TV. Send a power on and off to both your receiver and your TV at the same time. No more need for like a Logitech Harmony or anything like that. Now, MythTV has CEC built right into it, so you should be able to hook one of these boxes up and have your TV send the command straight through to MythTV, and it should be able to interpret them. I haven't had so much luck, but I found a bug in the code, and I was working with one of the devs to get it resolved. So I hope to have an updated driver for that very soon. Let's see here. Next thing is 3D support for side-by-side and top and bottom 3D. So I guess we have preliminary support for 3D. Now, Pat, you might have to try. Is your Blu-ray 3D capable?
No, I have no 3D stuff. No, my not
but
my
is,
TVs.
Okay, you got Blu-ray. Avatar, though, right? You got Avatar. Was that 3D on Blu-ray?
I don't think so.
Well, I might have to borrow it from you and rip it and, you know, try do an MKV out. and try this out, because my TV is 3D capable. So if that's the case, then not only did we get Blu-ray support this time around, but we also got 3D support, which is pretty cool. So I don't know too much about this yet, so we'll just have to try it out and see. Let's see, IPv6 support.
Well, let's talk about Blu-ray. Let's talk about Blu-ray. You mentioned Blu-ray.
I picked up
the Blu-ray player, and I threw Avatar in there, and it plays right off the disc, no problems. You don't get any menuing, but it does do the playback fine. Now, I tried some seasoned DVDs I have, like I have like True Blood. I also got the first season of Game of Thrones, but none of that stuff was able to start up for me by default.
Really?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's a new version of, what do they call it? What's the encryption on there? It was different than DVDs. I forget what it was.
I have another one I gotta try. I have a I don't have a lot of Blu-ray discs, so, you know, I've got a couple.
Neither do I.
I got a couple movies, and then I got a couple, you know, seasons full of HBO stuff, you know.
I got some of the Disney ones for my kids. You know, they seem to, you know, translate fine. I've actually ripped them to MKVs and threw them on the NAS box.
Oh, the rips are fine. The rips are fine. I'm talking about sticking a disc in there and playing it through the player.
Yeah, I just got Goonies too, and that came up pretty good.
Just
so,
Goonies
too? No. I got Goonies also.
Okay. I was gonna say there's a sequel. I didn't hear about this.
No. So
like that
one that
that's
one
classic.
Played. Yeah, I know. That's why I wanted to get it. You know, my kids are a little too young for it yet, but
my older son watched it. He loves it.
Yeah. Let's see here.
You're talking about
next. We have
you said IP6.
Oh, yep, I was gonna say HTTP control for query capabilities for the MythTV front end. So right now this is a proof of concept, but it looks like it's gonna be more. You know, I assume this is using the Myth Services API, because I know that is in there to be able to control a front end over HTTP like that. So I think that's all gonna go hand in hand, and this will be again something I mentioned later. Let's see, AirTunes, AirPlay support, whatever.
Yeah,
I don't think anyone
Apple
listening to this is worried about that. We got some new audio support as well. You can pass through, what is it, EAC3, True HD, and DTS HD. So this would be like the encryption on the, or the audio format on the, on Blu-ray and probably other media like that, I would think, right?
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. Now, there's a new hardware profiler, which is nice. Once you go through that that setup wizard that I mentioned, it gives you the option to take a snapshot of your hardware profile with no identifying information and send it to the developer so that they can start looking at and building up a catalog of hardware that people are using so that they can better support issues when they arrive.
That's cool.
So if you've upgraded the MythTV 25, I would say go to the hardware profiler and send your profile so that, you know, they can get a better idea as to what people are using. You can actually see statistics about this too. If you go to, what is it? It's Smolt, smolt.mythtv.org. You can actually see different statistics about, which I guess it looks like you can enable, you can send in something that does identify you, so you can see specifically your own hardware, which I didn't realize. I don't recall seeing anything that generated anything like that when I sent it in. But you can see host statistics, device statistics, things that were recent, you know, stuff like that. So I mean, there's a wiki out there for it as well. So I would take a look at that if anyone's interested in looking at what the other hardware is people are using.
Can you enable that through MythWeb? Do you know?
What?
The hardware profiles.
I don't know. I know that it was just available on that menu I think there might even be a menu item for it somewhere. But if you go through that setup wizard, the first screen I believe was the hardware profiler.
Gotcha.
So they have some animation support now in MythUI, and now they also have, I guess, more robust install scripts for Windows and Mac OS X. So they've done some other major changes, they said as well. MythVideo is no longer a separate package or a plugin. It's now built right into it. We talked about MythMusic, how it's been rewritten. Metadata lookup. This is really, really nice. We touched on it a little bit ago, but it can do a lot of stuff, and you can now set it up as one of your jobs, just like a transcoding job. If you go into MythWeb and you want to schedule something, bring up one of your recording schedules. You'll now see that you can enable or disable it, just like you can auto commercial flagging or auto transcoding, as well as your other user initiated jobs if you want to run any of those types of things. Let's see, there's another Apple thing, disregard that. So it looks like you can now use the internal player for a lot of the stuff with MythNet Vision, MythUI.
As you should, you know, you should really keep it in
Yeah. Time. Yeah, you shouldn't need to go out to like a VLC anymore or a Zine or a M player or anything like that. The internal player has gotten tremendously better with each release, so I'm really happy with that type of work that they're doing there. Let's see, they moved XVMC support, which there's no real reason to keep it around anymore if these video cards have been, you know, out of circulation for quite some time now. So it's good to be able to clean up some of that code and make the code base a little bit lighter and a little cleaner. They've removed a bunch of other things too with libmpeg2, not too much. Replacing MythXML, which ties hand in hand with the Myth Services API. And I think in the past we've touched on the MythXML. There was something I was doing with it at one point. I don't recall what that was, but now that the Myth Services API, you don't need to really deal with any of that stuff.
So let's
the
talk
last thing I see here is that the
let's talk about the
JAMU is
the API services. This is really
yes.
This is something that's, you know, something on the back end that most people won't see, but really what it does
right.
is it's basically a rewrite of getting access to the system through the web, right?
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, so if you have ever if you run a Twitter app, let's say, on your phone, okay, that is going to call a little web service that's going to strip out anything, you know, no graphics or anything like that, and it's going to break it down into just the data. And what it's going to allow you to do is pull down just these small, tiny chunks of data and update the interface that happens to be running right on your phone. Okay, that's the best example that I can make of that right now. What what the Myth TV developers have enabled is the ability to access various categories of the details that are behind Myth TV that are making it do what it does on a daily basis. And those categories are broken down into, let's see here, Myth Services API.
So basically this is opening up the functions of Myth TV through an easy to access API to be used by different kinds of programs.
Exactly. So they've broken it down into capture services, channel services, content services, DVR services, front end services, guide services, Myth services, and video services. Capture is more like Myth TV setup. It allows you to go in and configure your capture devices. Delete one, change, settings on them. Channel services are going to be very similar to the channel editing portion of the Myth TV setup. It allows you to go in and add and remove channels, but you're going to have to know like frequencies and stuff like that, and ATSC and all that type of stuff. You're going to have to know quite a bit of low level stuff to be able to go in and use some of these. The content services are what are going to allow you access to any of the downloaded artwork that's out there, accessing, files that you can, download, binary files, whether it's a recording, a video, music file, an image, that type of stuff. The DVR services are going to allow you to do your live streaming, the HDTV live streaming that we mentioned. This is kicking off a transcoding job, and what it really does is it takes your video and it chops it into 10-second chunks. Okay, they're calling them segments, and these segments then are pushed over HTTP, very small, you talk about a regular recording could be like, 5, 6, 7, gigabytes, let's say. Some recordings are pretty large. You get an hour, hour and a half recording, it's probably 2 to 5 gigabytes, right? So this chops it up into teeny tiny little chunks and is able to send them much more easily over HTTP, which is just what you would use in your browser. Let's see, there's guide services, which is for accessing your listings, your channel listings that are out there with this is playing at this time on this day. The Myth service is, again, a lot of the back-end stuff gets you access to, like, the database version, stuff like that. I think there's a service in there that allows you to kind of say, hey, are you awake? Are you alive? That type of a thing. Then there's the video service, which gets you access to your video catalog that's out there. So there's different things that you can do with that. Now, with this, a couple of us have gotten together, and we started building the Myth TV for Android application.
Now let's take a step back. Dan, you're a Java programmer. So basically, what have you done?
Yes.
You're
what I've done is I've mapped out all of these services into a Java library that is being used by an Android application.
Technically you could write a Java-based front end too.
Yes. With this library, you would be able to run any Java application or any device that uses Java would be able to use this to be able to build their own front end. I believe you can run some Java stuff on a BlackBerry. So right there, you could write a BlackBerry application if you wanted to. But what we've done is the three of us have gotten together and have been working on the code for this. All previous, guests on the show. So Tom Kenny, who wrote MythMote, and John Babb, who is a Mythbuntu developer who wrote the Myth Export stuff that's inside of the Mythbuntu Control Center. So the three of us have been working on it. I've got Pat, you're testing it out. Pat Archibald, who's been on the show, he's testing it out. We got a number of people. Some of the Myth devs have gotten a hold of it as well and have been testing it out. And so we got a lot of people looking at it on a number of different devices. Let me talk about what this can do right now. Okay, this application, when you come into it, you can access this application whether you're on your home network or whether you're away from your home network. So I'm giving you a location profile page here. If you're on your home network, you can go into the preferences and say, scan for my back end, and it goes out and finds it for you, and it will immediately set up a profile for you. You can control playback profiles, so if you want to have higher quality when you're at home and low quality when you're away, so you can save on bandwidth, both from your ISP and on your phone, you can do that. When you come into the main screen, though, you'll have either a home button or an away button. Each of you takes you into a very similar-looking dashboard. There's a DVR dashboard, and then there's a multimedia dashboard. You just swipe it from left to right. On the DVR dashboard, you're going to be able to see your recordings or access your recordings. That's what's implemented right now. All the rest of the stuff is not implemented yet, so it's very, very beta. I will say that.
Yeah, right. Right now, the last version that John pushed out, you could basically access your recordings and watch them on your devices.
Yes. Yeah.
And I was playing.
But
around.
You will from that.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was saying.
No, I was going to say you will from that dashboard. You will be able to access recordings, your upcoming list, and your TV listing. Your TV guide type listing. From the multimedia menu, you'll be able to access your movies, your pictures, your music, if you want to. Also, you'll be able to access all of the functions of MythMoat, which is what Tom is working on. So the nice thing about this, too, is this is going to kind of take what he's already done with MythMoat and extend it in the fact that you no longer are going to have to set up Myth front ends. It's going to go out and through ZeroConf, find all the Myth front ends that are on your network and allow you to auto-discover them and control them without any extra configuration, which is really nice. Now, go ahead. You were talking about the recordings?
Yeah, the playback profiles. I was playing around with the different playback profiles, and you know, I was looking at the high, and I was trying to play it back on my phone. I looked at what my hardware specifications for as far as resolution went out, so I said, you know what? My highest resolution is what I can display on my phone, so that's what I'd set it at. And then I played around with the frame rates, bringing them down, bringing them up, and that's the most direct way to affect the quality of it. So that's the best way of doing it. You know, you could try it out. You have the three basic settings, the high, medium, and the low. And then you can adjust the resolution as well as the frame rate, too. So with those parameters, you can tune it pretty well, depending on what kind of device and what kind of hardware and how beefy your hardware is to be able to handle it.
Right. And likewise, then also take into consideration bandwidth. So if you're away from home and you're on a 3G connection and you want to be able to access something, you can really strip that video down to be as little as you want it to be, which is really nice.
Right. Say like, you know, really low resolution, say like something like 320 by 640, or rather 320 by 480,
something like that,
you know.
I think what I have in there, it's like 288 by 175, which is, I think, what like an old YouTube dimensions are.
It's pretty old. It's a small screen.
Yeah. But still, I mean, if you're running close to your data limit, you know, and, you know, I'm lucky. My company pays for mine, so I don't really have to worry about it, you know. But if you want to scale it back, you can do that.
Yeah.
Now, you know, being away doesn't necessarily mean you're on 3G. You could be sitting in a coffee shop on their Wi-Fi, right? It just means that you're not on your home network and you can't auto-discover your back end.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, it's that type of stuff.
And it works. The playback works, so... It's basically you're saying MythMoat's going to get rolled into it. You're going to be able to access your archive videos files. You're going to be able to access your pictures and your music, and you're going to be able to see your listings. I assume that you're going to be able to play around with like schedule recordings, and also delete recordings too.
Yes. Yeah. All of that is what I have kind of in mind for this application.
And another thing I noticed was when you go and look at your listings of your videos, and your recordings, if you have metadata for it, like banner art and all that stuff shows up in there.
Yeah,
That was nice.
Yes, I made sure that it actually replaces just regular text with an actual banner that gets downloaded automatically anyway on your back end.
So that was a nice touch of it. Now, it's far from being completed. Right now, we're talking like what? Alpha 1?
Yeah, right. Very, very alpha. So, but if anybody is interested in having access to this, I do have a Dropbox repository. What I think I'll do is I'll take that link and I'll put that into the Myth TV Cast Google Plus page and I'll put it over on the Facebook page, you know, so that people can access them. Likewise, I'll also put a link to the GitHub repository. All of this code is GPL code, so. It's completely free for anyone to take a look at. If you want to even contribute it, just get in contact with me. You know, we'll be glad to have people, you know, take a look. You know, the Myth API is pretty extensive, so I mean, it took a lot to kind of go in and map all of that stuff. So I mean, I definitely want to see people, you know, be able to use it. So I want this out there, and I want people to use it. I would like to be able to push out, you know, as a very beta, you know, version of it, just to, you know, to be able to do watch recordings and whatnot, you know, into the market, you know, as soon as we can, because this is working really, really well. We have found that the internal, you know, player in HTTP streaming player inside of Android is not very good though. So I hope Google steps up somewhere and fixes that. So right now, I think both of us, you and I, are both using the BS Player Lite, I believe it's called.
That's a good player, and because it uses hardware acceleration.
Yes, it uses hardware acceleration. I believe you can download some separate profiles, whether you're on ARM6 or ARM7 on your phone or tablet. And you can really take advantage of the hardware playback on these devices. Now, I've personally tried it. I have a HTC One and on AT&T. My wife has an Asus Transformer tablet, which is a TF300. I've tried it on both of those, and other than a slight issue with the HTC One, it works great. You know, I mean, I watched a whole hour-long episode on the tablet the other night, just sitting there on my lap, watching my big 55-inch screen in the background just sit there, you know, but I was watching it on the tablet, which is really, really nice to be able to do that. I know some of the other guys are using like Samsung Galaxy Nexus phones and other tablets and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so
we're good on my LG.
By all means, we want people to go out and try this out. You know, layout is still, you know, is in my mind, it's a little bit of a back burner type thing until we get all the functionality worked out. You know, I want to make it look nice, but I'd rather make it work right first and then have the playback, you know, not work or not being able to access the back end or something like that.
Yeah, right now there's an application on the Android marketplace. It's called Myth Frontend that this guy wrote, and it's closed source, and you could do three things out of there. You could play back your recordings, you could play back your videos, and I believe you could watch live TV too. That's what he has in there. So, but that's closed. Now, that guy mentioned that he was going to open it up at some point, but he hasn't at this point. So what's the licenses on this going to be, Dan? Is this completely open source?
It's completely open source. It's GPLv2. Actually, if you go to github.com/mythtv-android, you will find it.
So you're keeping in spirit with MythTV in general?
Yes. The other app is ad-supported as well. I don't intend to put any ads or anything like that in this. Donations, hey man, maybe I'll put a link on the website if anybody wants to make donations or whatever. That would be great. But otherwise, you know, it's completely, you know, community driven. Yeah, let us know. I mean, if there's something you want to see in here too, I mean, we would, you know, we definitely want to make this be what people want it to be. So I mean, I'm really excited about this.
The big question I have is this going to be the official MythTV client on Android?
I would like it to be.
Because right now...
I really would.
The application says MythTV, so...
Yeah, I mean, if the MythTV developers are okay with that, then I am all for this. If at some point we even need to merge it into MythTV in some way or another, I mean, I'm fine with that too. But I mean, I want this to be out there so that people can use it. I'm starting to think about, you know, about what we're already able to do with it in such a short amount of time. You know, you used to have to buy like a sling box or whatever if you wanted to access your TV or access your content remotely, and I never tried that. I don't have one of those. I know you had to pay. I think there was like a subscription for it or whatever. We don't have that. You know, I mean, you pay your, you know, schedules direct, you know, that's it. You're $20 a year. That's it. That's all you pay for MythTV. So that's what this is going to allow you to do. You can then get this wherever you want. Take it into the, you know, the bathroom with you or whatever. Take it on the road with you or wherever you're at, and you can access your network. you can access any of the content on your Myth TV backend.
Now let me ask you, what do you got to do to be able to get into your Myth TV system? If you've got a firewall, which most people do, you have to do port forwarding or SSH tunnel.
Well, there's one of two options that you can do, and there's a wiki entry in the GitHub repository on how to set this up. But you can, one, open up the port to your Myth backend. You know, 6544 is the default port. You do that, though, you're letting people kind of be able to get into it, and if you may have an issue with some of that. The second option is install, you know, an SSH client like ConnectBot in the Play Market that allows you to set up port forward SSH, you know, tunneling. So I have a local tunnel that connects every time that I SSH into my MythTV backend from outside of here, and then it's just like you connect as a local host in a sense, you know, on a port. So I just port forward 6544 to my local host 6544. Then anything that I issue on my phone when I'm away from my home network, it just tunnels everything right through SSH. Now you may not want to, you know, run your video playback through encryption like that, but hey, it works. You know, I mean, the GitHub, you know, repository has the wiki page for it, and it's easy enough to set up. So
I'm gonna try that.
If you don't want to expose your back end, then you know, this is the way around it.
I'll try it, definitely.
Yeah, give it a shot. Give it a shot.
I haven't tried streaming over like a 3G. So that's what I need to try.
I've tried it, you know, when I was sitting at work one day, I just kind of threw it on just to see, and it seemed to be working just fine.
That's pretty cool. So do you guys have an ETA when you think you're going to roll it out to the marketplace or no?
I don't know. I want to get some of the, you know, maybe like an initial artwork. You know, at least when you put something into the Play Market, you have to have certain banner graphics in place anyway. So I'm thinking I just need to get that stuff taken care of. I talked to our friend Richard Quirin, who does a lot of the artwork for the shows and stuff like that, and he's gonna make me up an image for the logo that goes into the Google Play Market. Which is it's a requirement to put an APK out there. I'm not sure why, but you have to put an image out there associated with it. But other than that, you know, I mean, you know, once we get some of these, I'm trying to work on this one minor issue with, and it seems to only affect the HTC1, and I think it's because of how they're throttling the multi-processing on it. Because this one issue only seems to be on my phone and not on anybody else's devices that I've heard of. But as soon as I maybe get that taken care of, I think it might be ready to be pushed out there. I would like to see the initial MythMote stuff put in place too, and Tom is working on that stuff. So
and video playback.
I think it's going to be the auto discovery.
The video
playback. Yeah, the auto discovery is really, ZeroConf is really, really neat. You can install, anybody on Linux can go into the repository and look at it's Avahi-discover, and it will show you everything that is ZeroConf on your network, and you'll be able to clearly identify what is a MythTV master backend, what is a MythTV slave backend, and what are MythTV front ends. It's really, really nice, the way that the ZeroConf works. And I figured we might as well be able to use that for our, you know, for this application as well, since you're on the network and it supports, you know, discovery like that.
That's awesome. So we're looking forward to the beta release of MythTV for Android.
Definitely. And like I said, if anybody has any interest in wanting to try it out or whatever, either hit me through the through Google Plus or Twitter or Facebook or something like that, and I'll gladly post out the, you know, I have a Dropbox, you know, repository set up for the APK, or if you're interested, download the source code and build it and install it yourself. It's very easy to do. I have instructions out there on the wiki as well for setting up, you know, the Android SDK as well as the Eclipse environment, and you know, you basically just, you know, hook a USB cable into your phone, and inside the IDE you say run application, and it runs it right on your phone then.
Cool.
Unfortunately, you can't run this. You can run this application in one of the emulators, but it won't be able to discover anything on your network because you can't give it like a Wi-Fi, access through the emulator, it only understands that there's like a data connection, which happens to be it kind of bridges your internet connection with what they have as the 3G connection or 4G connection, you know, locally in the emulator. It doesn't have any notion of a Wi-Fi. So you can't do any type of discovery or whatever. But what I found is if you just type the IP address in, it does work. I don't know if it does the live streaming, but it's something if somebody wants to play with, they can. But I just test it out on the phone anyway, so or the tablet.
Excellent, man. Excellent work.
Thank you.
So was it much easier within 25 to do this with the new API? I know you attempted to do something similar.
Oh, yes. The last time I went around, I went one way was to embed a Flash player into a page inside the application, and it worked, but I couldn't get any, like, if you had a password set up on your MythWeb, like that portion of Android was broken at the time. I believe a lot of that's been resolved, but I don't want to be in the business of doing stuff with Flash anyway. So I'm a web developer. I'm
yeah,
a Java
you
want to
get
developer.
Away from Flash.
I stay away from Flash altogether. So, yeah. So I was able to, use MythWeb and the RSS capabilities of it to get access to everything that I needed. You know, these recordings. You know, here's the date and times. You know, all that kind of stuff. But this is much much nicer because now I can just say, send me this data in JSON or send me this data in XML, and I can parse that much more easily and much more quickly on the phone here than trying to, go through that other route and trying to get a Flash player to run. So that was a pain in the ass.
Yeah, it was a bit of a hack job what you had previously, but I'm glad that
it's much
more seamless now.
Oh, yes, it is very nice. And like I said, if you're on your network, it'll just discover it. It'll discover everything for you and be able to play it.
Excellent, excellent. Well, man, it's been good. We haven't talked in a while, but a lot's been happening. And I'm glad that you guys have worked on this.
This has been a busy couple of... This project's been a busy couple of weeks, I'll tell you that. So.
Hey, once you guys release it on the market and more people start using it, you're going to get a lot of feedback. And that's when the improvements will really start moving.
Yep. I think, too, once we do that, we'll probably say, a lot of times, I notice this with open schedule, people will say, I couldn't do this or I couldn't do that. And it was really because, hey, the organizers didn't, turn on the schedule. That's not, the comments are not the place for that type of stuff. So if you're running into a bug with something or whatever, I almost want to direct people right into the issues on GitHub so that we can track that stuff a little better.
Yeah, definitely reporting bugs is definitely a good thing. And especially when people use open source software, you need to have that dialogue with the devs and let them know if there's something wrong.
Right.
And
I'm in IRC too, so I mean if anybody, anybody needs to hit me up, I'm DM Fry pretty much everywhere. So
we're particularly related to Myth.
I'm mostly in Oddcast Planet, but I do hang out in the Myth TV developers channel. I hang out in the Torque channel, which is the Myth TV fork. I hang out in the Myth TV users channel. I'm in the Ubuntu Myth TV channel. I have a presence pretty much in any of those things. So you can hit me up for questions or anything like that.
Cool, cool. Well, man, it was a good episode. We talked quite a bit, and exciting
covered a lot.
Stuff.
I'm pumped to get this out there, so I want people to use it just to see how it's working on their devices and stuff like that.
Yep, it's good stuff, man. It's working. So, I'm sure we'll talk about it in the future again next time and beyond.
Definitely. So, yeah, definitely want to keep regular updates coming out.
Yep, that's it, man. Get it out there early and start pushing updates. That's the
way to get we'll have to get Tom and John to come on, too, to talk a little bit more about it as well.
Definitely.
I'm not very good at singing songs, but here's a try.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe. Space is network of wormholes.
You might emerge somewhere else in space.
Somewhere else in time.
The sky calls to us. We do not destroy ourselves. We will one day venture to the stars. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rose. A morning filled with 400 million suns. The rising of the Milky Way. The cosmos is full beyond measure. Elegant truths of exquisite interrelationships of the awesome machinery of nature.
I believe our future depends powerfully on how well we understand this cosmos, in which we float like a mote of dust in the morning sky.
But the brain does much more than just recollect. It intercompares, it synthesizes, analyzes, it generates abstractions.
The simplest thought, like the concept of the number one, has an elaborate logical underpinning. The brain has its own language for testing the structure and consistency of the world. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rose. A morning filled with 400 billion suns, or the rising of the Milky Way.
The sky calls to us. If we do not destroy ourselves, we will one day venture to the stars.
For thousands of years, people have wondered about the universe. Did it stretch out forever, or was there a limit? From the Big Bang to black holes, from dark matter to a possible Big Crunch, our image of the universe today is full of strange-sounding ideas.
How lucky we are to live in this time, the first moment in human history when we are, in fact, visiting other worlds.
A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rose. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. The rising of the Milky Way.
A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rose. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. The rising of the Milky Way.
Surface of the Earth is the shore of the cosmic ocean. Recently we've waded a little way up, and the water seems inviting.